Ahoy, hearties! This podcast episode is for you, as my guest this week is another popular cast member from the hit series, When Calls the Heart. Coming up next on Brio.tv, the podcast. Well, every time I have a conversation with a cast member from When Calls the Heart, the hearties start downloading like crazy. I never knew the fans of this series were so devoted and so organized. I've had a great time over these past few years talking to Pascal Hutton, Andrea Brooks, Kevin Smith, and just last year, Kevin McGarry. Who knew that there were so many McGarrys? Season 11 of When Calls the Heart is winding down on both Super Channel in Canada and Hallmark in the United States. The serial drama stars Aaron Krakow as schoolteacher Elizabeth Thatcher Thornton, and it's set in the 1920s. The good news is that a 12th season has already been ordered. Time to check in then with the town of Hope Valley's jack of all trades and now mayor of Hope Valley, Mike Hicken, played by my guest today, Ben Rosenbaum. Here is our conversation. Thank you very, very much for doing this today. Really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
No, listen, congratulations. I've done a few podcast episodes with a couple of your colleagues over the last few years, and it was a revelation to me, the complete devotion hearties have to this series. It's explosive. It must blow you away, or maybe you take it in stride now, but I don't know anything really to compare this with. It's amazing, right?
It is absolutely amazing, and we never take it for granted. It is it feels like a true gift and really an honor to be part of something that has touched so many different lives.
Yeah, that sure seems to be the case, and congratulations. Your show When Calls the Heart, it's the number one show on Hallmark and also on Super Channel, you've been with the show. You actually were in as far back as season one, correct?
That's right. Yeah. Hickam has a long history on the show,
even though we didn't maybe know his first name for a few seasons.
Yes, that's right. And it continues to morph. I don't know anybody else on the show who has as many nicknames as Mike, Michael, Mikey, Hickam.
Well, there you go. And just run down the list. Like, he's been, always living in Hope Valley, but worked at the Mercantile, Lee's Sawmill, Gowan Petroleum, the Queen of Hearts, mayor. Like, he's had just about every job.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, it's true. He's been all over the place.
I was lucky to be on the set. I'm based near Toronto, but I was out in BC many years ago with the producers and got to go down to, I think it's Langley, BC. It's where it's near, mm-hmm. Right?
That's right.
And visited this incredible outdoor village that has been constructed. It must be an amazing place to be an actor, to be in this make-believe world, because it's all real and there. You can actually walk in and out of some of these buildings, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It's particularly fun that way and very easy to get into the reality of the show, because we put on the costumes and we step onto Main Street and we really look that way and we are there in that town. It's the only difference is that we usually have some sunglasses and our cell phones with us, but otherwise we really transport back in time.
And I remember when I was there, they had a stagecoach and I had a bone spine jarring ride in this thing. I think they had brought it in from Calgary. Did you have many encounters with this machine when you were in the early days, the early seasons?
I've been on horseback. I've been in the wagons. I've been in the cars. This season 11, I had an opportunity to, I don't believe I'm spoiling anything by saying this, but I drive a car it's always a really cool and fun experience to get each of these different forms of transportation and get a sense of what it felt like to do. I mean, you think about these people cross country or even half hour long journeys in these things. And
yeah.
You'd need a chiropractor afterwards.
Right. And we're in the 1920s now in Hope Valley. So a car would not have been that unusual at that time. But what were you driving? Was it an actual vintage 20s car? Do you know what?
Yes, it was.
Oh, wow.
I don't remember the specific model. I want to say I drove a Model T.
Cool.
But I could be wrong about that. It might have just been one that was comparable. But these are vintage cars that have been excellently kept up and in good working order for most of the time by our crew.
And you've been there long enough. You have seen Hope Valley physically grow. Like when I was there, it seemed impressive. There were 7 or 8 buildings. There was a school and the mercantile and things. But it every time you go back for another season, there's probably another building, right?
It's true. Some of them have transformed. What was once Dottie's dress shop is now the Yost pharmacy and ice cream shop. What was Gowan Petroleum has been many different things on the interior. Sometimes it's somebody's bedroom where we're shooting, or now it's the kids' sort of play space where Molly is looking after them. Mm. But there's been a lot of change over time there. It's a growing town.
And when you said you get fitted for costumes and everything, the clothes range from the 1920s to maybe the 2020s, right? Like, it looks like you guys just came out of Mark's Work Warehouse half the time now. Very different costumes for the show. Is it more relaxing maybe than when you first started on the show, where you maybe had stiff collars and things like that?
Yeah, it's funny. I notice it sort of depends on the character. There have been, you know, I always looked at Paul Green's character, played Dr. Carson on the show, and he always looked basically like Paul Green. Like the shirts he wore were, you know, it felt less like a 1910s buttoned-up doctor and more like relaxed and beachy vibes Paul Green. But then, you know, you get somebody like Lucas Bouchard, who's buttoned up and dressed to the nines in his 3-piece suits, and he looks very much of the period. And of course, with the women, there were a wide variety as well, from those who chose to wear the corsets to, you know, have the clothes fit a certain way and feel a certain way while they're acting, and those who chose not to. But regardless, it somehow blends together to give just the right amount of historical accuracy with kind of that Hallmark fantasy world that we live in.
Yeah, why not? I mean, even the Maori tunics have gone through transformations over the years on the show, I noticed. When I was here that time many years ago, I met Daniel Lessing, who is the original Maori, right? Yeah. Quite a character. I had a chat with him a few times. He's from Australia, I believe, originally, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Does anyone ever hear from Daniel Lessing anymore? I know it's been probably 6-7 years since he's been on the show.
It's actually funny timing to get that question, because even last year I would have said no, I hadn't heard from him in a while, but I actually got the chance to sit down with him and have a coffee in Vancouver.
Nice.
Just in February, when he was up there filming a movie with Aaron Krakow.
Oh, fantastic. So, that's great.
Got to sit down with him and catch up, and it was really lovely. He's just he's a sweetheart. He's a good guy.
Seemed to be a lot of fun too. Funny guy.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. Let's talk a bit about yourself. You're from Minnesota originally. Is that true?
That's right. Yeah. Wow. I was actually born out in Los Angeles, but then grew up in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And how did that transition happen? Were your parents in the film business or have anything to do with the industry at one point? Or?
Nope. Nope. The family trade is actually, they're all lawyers. My mom is now retired, but she was a Hennepin County judge, and my dad is a corporate lawyer. And it was just a move that came from family dynamics changing. And my mom is from Minnesota originally, so I moved back to be with family there, and then my dad found a job in Minneapolis, and we put down roots there.
Wow. I've been briefly in Minneapolis many years ago, and I believe that that where the Mary Tyler Moore Show was set, right?
That's right, yeah. There's a statue downtown for doing the famous beret toss.
I was going to ask about that. I mean, that must be very iconic to be part of that show, and even the house that they used to show on the exterior for Mary Richards was actually in that city, right?
Yeah, there was it's a big deal when you're, you know, when yeah. you're a town that isn't Los Angeles to have right. a show that is representing you to the world. It's nice, you know. Fargo isn't the only thing that shows off Minnesota.
Right. Yeah, no, yes, the other side. And being from there, you're almost like you know, you're just across the border from Canada. This so and you've lived a lot of your life now in British Columbia. You must feel you know, a third Canadians by at this point, right?
Yeah, it does feel like there's a lot of similarities between, well, my experience in Minneapolis especially, but the Midwest and and Canadians there's a similar kindness and politeness. And so I felt right at home when we started working up in Vancouver and spending more time there. And I love it so much, I've actually become a Canadian permanent resident in addition to being an American citizen. So
my goodness, really?
I'm really, really fall in love with the country.
What's involved in that? When you have to, do you have to do a history test of some sort to obtain that status?
I would receive a lot of jokes about how they, you know, have to get me out on the hockey ice and see what I can do. And, you know, if I'm able to ride a moose bareback through the woods and how much syrup I can drink and that, you know, all kinds of jokes that would be thrown my way. But no, it was just boring old paperwork with the help of a lawyer. Well, I wish it was more fun than that.
Hopefully you had a family member who could step in and help you at that point.
Yeah, that's right. Why aren't they ever useful in that way?
Well, hopefully you get some sort of a discount at Tim Hortons then, just to be that.
There you go.
With that status. Yeah. And it's been like, that's quite an incredible run, Ben, to be associated with one series. And by the way, congratulations, already renewed for a 12th season. That's quite a run, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Ben Rosenbaum. Well, what's new this month on Super Channel? Well, giddy up for the 11th season of When Calls the Heart, found exclusively in Canada on Super Channel Heart and Home. There are, of course, many burning questions from last season's shocking finale. Schoolteacher Elizabeth, Erin Krakow, she's saddled up with her Mountie man, Nathan Grant, played by former Brio TV podcast guest Kevin McGarry. Can these two ride off into the sunset and still manage parenting obstacles, huh? There are plenty of other obstacles to unravel as Hope Valley heads into the 1920s. Hardys and McGarrys can look forward to 12 new season 11 episodes. And don't forget, all 111 binge-worthy past episodes are available on Super Channel On Demand. Remember, Super Channel, an all-Canadian service, is available via most cable providers across the country, as well as streaming live and on demand with Amazon Prime Video channels and Apple TV Plus. You can also check out Super Channel Plus, available now on the Roku platform in Canada. Are you and your kids watching Knuckles on Paramount Plus? Nothing to do with the Three Stooges. This 6-episode animated series from Paramount and Sega is based, of course, on Sonic the Hedgehog. It recently set a global record as the most watched Paramount Plus original series of all time. And yes, adding punch to the series is Idris Elba as the voice of Knuckles. Beyond Knuckles, there's a mountain of entertainment for the entire family on Paramount Plus. This month, the streaming service welcomes back The Chi for a second half of season 6. Creator Lena Waithe's sometimes searing look at the complexities of life in Chicago, as well as the Black experience in America, has already been renewed for a 7th season. Look also for the 3-part documentary series Lola, The Story of Lollapalooza, which looks back to the roots of the music festival back in the early 90s. And brace yourself for the 9th season of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars. They're all streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. And we're back with Ben. To walk me through the process that I know from reading your bio, you've lived in a few cities, you've had acting credits on stage and other places. Just what was your first job in television?
Actually, I want to say When Calls the Heart was my first TV job.
Amazing. Wow.
Yeah. Let me give that a little thought. I'm fairly certain that's true. I'd done some short films and other things on camera, but I think that was my first TV gig, and really where I've cut my teeth in terms of being in front of the camera, getting comfortable with that, what comes with that kind of acting, what's expected and how to prepare for that versus what I grew up with, which was the stage and live theater.
And what kind of roles did you do on stage? Were you, you know, Shakespearean or contemporary? Where did you cut your teeth?
All of the above. You know, coming out of when you go through I did a BFA acting program. So 4-year conservatory style program, you know, just me and 19 other classmates. If they didn't, you know, over time, there were some people who left the program, but I think we graduated with 17, but it was a small group and we were together all 4 years. And so during that time, studying the classic works and contemporary works, we got to play all different kinds of roles. I mean, that's where you really get to stretch and play and do some things that you would never get to do in the professional world, where they tend to cast more to your physical type. So in school, I got to do some really fun stuff. My favorite role was Klingelhoff in Steve Martin's The Underpants. And he was an octogenarian with a comedic amount of Tourette's who comes in and says some wild and wacky things throughout the show. And it was a really, really fun role and probably not one I'm likely to get to play again for at least for a very long time.
Well, no,
but then out in the professional world, it was, you know, I played D'Artagnan in the Three Musketeers and the leading young man in a play called I Hate Hamlet. And so more traditionally towards the type that I was at that time, just a guy in his 20s and starting to get used to that world of like, oh, yeah, not everybody is going to be looking to stretch my range and see how far I can go in the professional world that kind of wants you to play what you are.
Well, that's great. But you've also, I think in your, as Hickman over the seasons shown quite a bit of range, not just in the various occupations, but what I appreciate about your role on When Calls the Heart is that you often are involved in some of the lighter moments. And to me, I think it's always important for a drama to have that, right? You know, like not to be totally serious.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Must be you probably look forward to getting the bits, the business to play some of the shtick on the show, right?
I do. I really enjoy being some of that comedic relief and offering a little bit of the balance to the drama. It's what I like to see in the shows that I watch. I like there to be some levity, and if it's not outright comedy, at least a wink, a sense of humor from a show. So it's not all too heavy, but I think our show has struck a really nice balance, through the years. And I'm really proud to be a part of that.
Yeah. I saw a quote that you, on another podcast, I believe you were talking to some folks and you mentioned back, in early days, you got this sort of a cue to your character, or at least to the future, was that that they were excited to see this Barney Fife character grow into a bit of an Andy Griffith. And that, of course, struck a chord for me, being older and literally being around when the Andy Griffith show was on. That seems to have been pretty accurate, right? Because your character has made that transition to a certain extent.
Yeah, you know, that was something that was said to me by one of our previous showrunners, John Tinker. Mm. And that was a reference point for him, talking about wanting to take what he saw as a Barney Fife character and transform him over the course of a couple seasons into more of an Andy Griffith. And that really culminated in the journey towards Hickam becoming the mayor.
Right.
And so that's... once it reached that point, I definitely had that in my head throughout that period of time. And then, you know, we transition into a new head writer, new showrunner, and they have their own viewpoint and take on who the character is. And it's been one of the challenges and joys of our show and the longevity that we've enjoyed, mm-hmm. having several different showrunners throughout the life of the show. Right. We as the actors are sort of the stewards of our characters and the storylines that we've had so far, and working with a new showrunner injects it with new life and new kind of a new way forward. And we have to find a way of honoring everything that we've done in the past that we have lived through and know about our characters as we carry it forward. So I think for Lindsay, our current showrunner, she saw, you know, where maybe John Tinker took Hickam from Barney Fife to Andy Griffith. I think for Lindsay, she saw the romantic potential in Hickam, right. and yeah. started guiding him on that. And so that's my new trajectory and kind of a path of change for the character. So it's really fun. Each couple of seasons, it feels like we get kind of a new arc for change. And it's been really, in that way, it's stayed really fresh.
Yeah. You don't want to have too much Barney Fife if you're the romantic lead, I think.
That's right. Yes. That's right.
Although I would still watch that. I think that'd be funny. you mentioned John Tinker. Any relation to the Tinkers, the famous NBC Tinkers, the guys that ran the studios and networks and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to get his family history wrong, I'm sure, but I know there was actually, when you mentioned Mary Tyler Moore, I remembered that there's a family connection there as well. I believe she was his stepmother.
That's so, well, Grant Tinker was Moore's husband, and he was the head of NBC at one time and head guy at MTM, right? One of the
He's definitely comes from some Hollywood TV royalty.
That's interesting, because your show is also one of the other architects is, of course, the son of another great.
Yeah, Michael Landon Jr.
Right. My goodness. Did you ever get a chance to speak with or meet him? I think he was pretty hands on the first couple of seasons, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's a really lovely guy. I've enjoyed every time I've gotten to see him. I wasn't as involved in season one, so I didn't get to work with him a ton on set. Mm-hmm. But I got to spend some time with him away from set and get to know him over the years, of course, at different parties, family reunions, and other opportunities when he's come up to visit set. And he's a really nice guy and very funny. So he's a lot of fun to hang out with.
It's incredible when you think like this show, When Calls the Heart, was very much from the same cloth as some of his dad's long-running shows, Little House and shows like that. I actually
absolutely
got,
I
was able to interview Michael Landon. I was working for TV Guide Canada and was in LA.
Is that right?
Yeah, he was working on his final show I had the pretty much the last print interview, and literally a week or so later, he found out he had pancreatic cancer. It was very, very tragic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But he was very funny. I really had a great time talking to him. He was making fun of Lorne Greene on Bonanza being a terrible horseman and things, you know, and it was really fun to talk to him. So pretty cool.
That's great.
Yeah. So it's amazing to be that long on one show, but be part of that, you must feel that connection to this heritage of television through these pioneers and people who are very, even the sons of some of the great pillars of the medium, right?
Yeah, it's very true. And we take those comparisons when they come, and we feel very flattered by it. You know, when it, I think Little House on the Prairie is a great reference point for us when people ask us about the show in our real lives. If people say they haven't seen When Calls the Heart, I know it sounds crazy, but they're out there, people who haven't seen it. Little House is a common reference point for me when describing what we do. And you know, we should be so lucky to have the kind of run that they had and the kind of loyal following for as long as they did.
Yeah, well, seems like on both counts you have, so that's pretty good. You mentioned the more romantic roles you're playing now. We've seen you often in scenes with Amanda Wong playing May, and you know, there was you and Hickman and May celebrated a milestone this season, I think, didn't they?
They have celebrated their 5-month anniversary, which is very sweet. It feels very them to be counting. Well, particularly it feels very Hickam to be counting the days, hours, minutes. The 5-month anniversary is really fun. And I mean, just to see, I mean, after so many years on the show, to get to play Hickam on a date was a milestone for me. And I couldn't ask for a better scene partner than Amanda. It's been a revelation to work with her. She's just, we have a lot of fun together, and it's very, I think we have a really easy time just talking and listening to each other, which lends itself to sort of a sweet, genuine romance on screen.
Wow, that's great. I actually watched a podcast of the two of you being interviewed, and it seemed that way off screen as well. You were just very...
nice. Thank you.
Yeah, it was cool. She was helping.
Yeah, we had a good time together.
Yeah, very good. My goodness, so many other cast members going in and out, different Mounties. I didn't know
that. True. We've had a lot of changeover on the show.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of stable members of the cast as well, which really lends itself to that that sense that it's a true small town.
Yeah. Well, I guess, too, the number one on the call sheet remains Erin, of course. And she
absolutely
obviously has set a good tone for everything to follow. I spoke with Kevin McGarry last year. And he certainly, his storyline caught fire last season pretty much too, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. He's really done a great job, I think, bringing this character to life in a way that has enjoyed a slow burn and now, as you say, is kind of catching fire.
I mean, you know, I know I learned that there were McGarrys as well as Hardys. So are there Bennies? I mean, what do you call your army?
Well, you know, early on, there were some really great focused fans who picked out Hickam as somebody they liked, and they called themselves Hickam's Hardys. But that's
nice.
It's a bit of a long hashtag, and I just had a friend suggest to me that they should name themselves Hickies, and I realized it was sitting right there.
That's fantastic.
Right, let's there start in front of that. Us the whole time. So you know, I can't name my own fan group, but I would hope anybody listening to this might catch on and maybe take it upon themselves. Maybe the idea just kind of pops into their own head.
I'm going
to
do
start the hashtag Hickeys.
I'm going to do what I can to promote Hickeys. I think that's the ideal way to promote a podcast.
Come, that'll make my friend Ken very happy.
There you go. Let's push that agenda. More with When Calls the Heart's Ben Rosenbaum after these short messages. Well, time once again to speak with Emily Gagné from Hollywood Suite. Emily, what do you got for us this month?
Well, Bill, I've got some incredible series. I know that we're known for movies, but we actually have series, if you didn't know. And there's some great ones coming this month, including Mr. Bates versus the Post Office. Have you heard of this series, Bill?
Mr. Bates versus the Post Office?
Yes.
No. What's it about?
It's about the UK fight with the postal workers and the government, and Toby Jones stars in it. It's a really incredible true story. And if you know anything about it, I think you'll enjoy it. But if you don't know anything, it's just an interesting true story that I think is really going to captivate you.
So nothing to do with Norman Bates.
Norman Bates is not in it. No.
All right.
No,
good.
No.
Okay.
This is a different Bates. Gotcha. A little bit less killing, you know,
nice.
But still a lot of drama. And it's coming to us at the end of May, May 28th. There's going to be like a 2-night premiere, but you can also stream it if you're more of that kind of person.
All right. Well, another series. What else you got?
Yeah, Until I Kill You is our other big series right now, and it is a world exclusive, so you can't watch it anywhere else. Oh. And it's a true crime drama, so if you're into that, I think you're going to love it. I'm not going to tell you anymore because I don't want to spoil it in case you know the true story, but Until I Kill You, our viewers are loving it, and I think potential viewers will love it too.
Until I Kill You. Wow.
Okay. I know.
Worldwide exclusive on Hollywood Suite starting right now. Fantastic. All right. Thanks, Emily.
Thank you, Bill.
And we're back with the show. Well, it is a fun show. Now, are you able to squeeze in any other work in the off season? Do you have any a few months where you're able to pursue other things?
Yeah, that can be sort of self-generated. One of the things that when you're on a show like ours with the talented cast that we have, one of the things that can kind of happen is, while we're sitting around waiting for our scenes, we'll get to talking about different ideas we have for, a Hallmark or a Super Channel movie that we would want to create ourselves to star in. So there's a lot of that, sort of writing and coming up with ideas together. And then of course, there's just the natural path of auditioning. I have, my agent in Canada, and I'm auditioning for things throughout the season and throughout the hiatus as well. So it's just the work of being an actor is never really done, never really takes break.
Right. And in Vancouver in particular, it's quite a center of production.
Absolutely.
So you must have opportunities that are nearby, but have you worked in other places in Canada? Have you done anything in Toronto or other?
I worked in North Bay.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Up in North Bay. And actually getting there was a whole story unto itself. I flew in, there was a blizzard that blew in while I was trying to fly into Toronto. And we had to circle for so long that we were threatening to run out of gas. We had to land at a nearby airport that was out of harm's way, refuel the plane, fly back to Toronto. And by that point, it was like 2 or 3 in the morning. So of course there was no way for me to easily get to North Bay at that time. So production hired a driver to drive me through a whiteout blizzard up to North Bay. I got in, I hope my math isn't off here, but I remember getting in like 6 a.m. and I had to be on set at noon. So it was
a
quick turnaround. I was not in the best shape. I was pretty poorly rested for that day on set.
What was the production?
Everybody was really kind, and it was a movie that I did for Netflix, and it was called, hang on, Christmas Inheritance.
Okay. All right. There you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they do a lot of Hallmark Christmas movies in and Netflix for other people too. Yeah. North Bay, Sudbury. It's quite become quite a production hub. I've been in there myself interviewing people. And yeah, even that's sort of the coin toss from Toronto is, do you fly or drive? Because you can be there in 5 hours in a car. Four maybe,
sure,
if you're really in a hurry. But yeah, it's good for you to have dipped your toe in that land as well.
Yeah,
but you've lived other places too in the States, right? Los Angeles, of course, but you must have worked all over the place down there.
I spent time in New York City as well. Between Minneapolis and New York, I actually was part of a national tour of a couple of Shakespeare plays. And so we took those all around the country. We started and ended in New York, and I just didn't leave. I just stayed after we finished our production run in the city. I stayed in Manhattan and started doing regional theater from there, and eventually then Vancouver and Los Angeles. And so it's, you know, when you're living the life of a regional theater actor, somebody who goes out to do plays at different theaters around the country, you get to, of course, spend, you know, a month, 2 months, sometimes 3 months if you're really lucky and you get a nice long rehearsal period. So, you know, that's been Denver and Salt Lake City and different places around the country that I've gotten to spend, dip a toe in and spend a little bit of time. So it's a really fun way to get to know some different cities around the country.
An actor's life is kind of a nomad life, isn't it?
It certainly can be.
Yeah.
And we've been very lucky for the past 12 years to know we've got one place we're going to be for half the year. And
that's true.
Especially with the way the show films and out in Langley in one location, it feels rare and very special that we get to kind of, we know where we're going to be.
No kidding. Did you ever look into Stratford, Ontario for Shakespeare? I know that's...
It is a well-storied and historied place. I would love to get out to Stratford. Mm-hmm. My grandparents were from New York.
Yeah.
Would go every year up to the Shakespeare Festival there.
Wow.
And I think would go and watch some shows. And so I'd always heard about it growing up as being sort of a pinnacle of excellent Shakespeare and stage acting. And so I would love to spend some time there. There's actually a connection between Stratford and the Guthrie Theater, which is in Minneapolis.
Wow, so of course,
This is just this is a long-winded way of saying, yes, I not only have heard of it, but would love to spend some time there.
Wow. Well, fingers crossed. They have a few stages, and it's great productions for sure. At this point on When Calls the Heart, you must, you know your character better than anyone. Do you have opportunities, depending on the director or showrunner, to suggest storylines or, you know, improvise at all?
Yeah, it's a combination of those things. We are lucky at this point to have good relationships with, you know, our current showrunner, Lindsay Sterman, and our previous showrunner, John Tinker. Both had sort of open door policies and were welcoming of ideas and made sure that they had some conversations with the cast. And that's always really appreciated. And I feel like it goes a long way to maintaining that series long trajectory for these characters. But then I, in particular, I feel very lucky that I think I've earned the respect of directors I've worked with on the show over the years and they allow me to improvise a bit or throw some things out there sometimes, get an extra take where it's a little more free. And I'm always tickled when I see those things make the final cut of the show. I mean, you never know how it's going to go, but when you put something out there that's feels, if you have an opportunity to do something that feels unique to the character, I I at this point feel confident taking a stab at it. And luckily that's been, they've made it in.
Have you been in the other opposite end of that, where you get your script and you just think, there's no way Mike would ever do this. There's no, I'm going to be in my trailer today till this is sorted out.
You know, never quite so far to that end of things. But I remember, it's funny the way these things work out, because I remember receiving the script where Mike decides he's going to leave Coulter Lumber mm-hmm. and go with Gowan Petroleum. And I felt very strongly there's no way Mike would ever betray the Coulters. He's so loyal to Lee and Rosemary. If there's any sense that it's the selfish move to go over to Gowan Petroleum, he wouldn't do that. I wouldn't cause a rift with Lee. And then you play it out and you follow the storyline and eventually it just becomes part of who the character is. I know some actors may feel differently about this, and there are degrees to all these kinds of questions, but we're making it all up. It's all
that's true,
it's all fiction. So the idea that my character wouldn't do this, as I'm using air quotes, is I think the more patient that we can be and more collaborative we can be, it all can work. We can make it all work. So I am now, I'm glad I never threw a tantrum or tried to back out of that storyline. It now is just part of who Hickam is, and it adds to that what has become kind of one of his famous traits of having multiple jobs throughout the town. And that's, it eventually led to getting, I got to work with Martin Cummins, which was awesome. I feel grateful that I got to become much closer with him just in life. I love that guy. Wouldn't have spent as much time with him had I not played that out. So, you never know where things are going to go. So I try my best to just show up on the day and make it as Hickam as possible, no matter what's written, and have a good time.
That's awesome. That's great. And also just wanted your feedback a bit on, I know they have these family events at the actual location where they invite Hardys and fans to come aboard and wander and see the set. Have you taken part in some of that? What's that experience been like?
I have indeed. From the beginning, it was the loveliest surprise and just so overwhelming to meet. I think what can be missing for me in TV is that, versus live theater, is that connection to the audience and getting to feed off their energy and getting a sense of, why you're out there telling that story. So these, the Hardys family reunion events that you're referring to have kind of filled that void and given us an opportunity to meet the people whose stories, who are watching these stories and for whom they are very important and can be moving and touching and help them through hard times in their lives, or they just, have their favorite characters. And it's fun to see, it's fun to see how much people enjoy what we're doing, and it really fuels us to keep telling the stories and keep doing it at a high quality level.
And as you say, you get that feedback. Again, I remember years ago when I worked at TV Guide, talking to one of the producers of Knott's Landing, I think David Jacobs.
Oh, sure.
And he was saying how he would go and sit and have a sandwich at Art's Deli in the Valley in Los Angeles. And he would talk to the waitresses about the show and make notes, that often they were the ones that would say, no, you can't have these two do that. but that's like you say, where else, you don't have an audience, right? So you get these notes from real people. And I think it does help. Ben, I was wondering too, do you get a chance to watch much Canadian television now that you've lived so long in Canada? And then one show in particular, Murdoch Mysteries, seems, you could almost do a When Calls the Heart Murdoch Mysteries crossover now, don't you think?
Well, I'll have to check that one out. No, I'm sorry to say that I haven't spent a lot of time. You know, when we are up there working, we oftentimes don't have like cable set up in the places where we're staying. You know, it's usually just what I bring my Apple TV and continue to watch the same things I stream when I'm here in LA as well. So it's I suddenly realize how shamefully I've behaved. I should have been watching a lot more Canadian television. But I just continue streaming whatever I've got going on when I'm, you know, leaving the head up there, whatever's coming out new on Apple TV. And
there's so much to watch. It makes me dizzy, and particularly
it's overwhelming.
And Apple TV right now, and I was going to get to this now. I always ask three questions towards as we're wrapping up, but what you're watching now. But I can't, in the last month, Apple's had, I don't know if you've seen the Michael Douglas series on Franklin that they have.
That one's on my list.
Yeah, it's stunning. It really is epic. Palm Royale, you know, they've got a lot of some documentaries coming up. It's if you were just watching one service now, you could absolutely dine out on Apple TV.
Yeah, it's true. I was just watching, I watched this year Masters of the Air.
Oh, wow.
I was just loving it.
Yeah, exciting. Great, great World War II epic. It's pretty amazing. Let's go down that road a bit further. What else are you watching right now?
It's funny. I always maintain so many things going on because you watch one show, you love it. It goes away when in the hiatus, you start watching something else. All of a sudden the next season of that show you loved before was, and it just piles and piles and piles. So I always have a hard time just conversationally when people ask me this, I have a hard time remembering, what am I watching right now? But actually I'm just, I'm in the middle of watching A Gentleman in Moscow.
Absolutely. That's the
with
one
Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor on Paramount.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, that's tremendous.
Yeah, it's also just a stunningly beautiful period piece that takes place over the course of decades. So it's really interesting to watch. They've got, of course, Ewan McGregor and a couple other characters who stay central and remain kind of aging throughout the series, but many of the characters are, you know, they seem like they're going to be these main characters who will be around forever, but you know, then they'll jump forward 5-10 years and it was a rough time in Russia, and so all of a sudden they're gone. And
yeah,
so it's a really fascinating show to watch, and one I'm really enjoying.
Based on, it's sort of when the monarchy was dismantled, and he's stuck in the room that he can't leave.
Yes,
ever,
during the revolution.
Yeah,
yes,
it's an incredible story.
Punishment is that he is forced to live out his days in a fancy hotel.
Right.
I also am loving Welcome to Wrexham. I don't know if you're watching that one.
I haven't seen the new
documentary series.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's
and that show
fabulous.
Gets me pumped up.
Yeah. Those two personalities, the owners, right? And they've taken such a gamble, you know. But it's all the people
Absolutely.
That live there are so rich. You couldn't make them up, could you?
Well, that's sort of the surprise and the delight of the show is that it turns out it's as much about the people in the town of Wrexham as it is about the team in a sports documentary.
Yeah.
And of course, from the beginning, there's a lot of Ryan Reynolds and
it's always sunny in Philadelphia. Yeah.
Yes, I know, but
I'm drawing a blank too.
I'm sure that this happens to him a lot, and I feel perpetuating it.
Ryan Reynolds he takes up a lot of space when you're trying to remember.
He does. He does. He can't help himself. But I really like that show, and they're actually going to be coming to do a friendly match with the Vancouver Whitecaps.
Oh wow!
This year. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to seeing them live.
Yeah, no kidding. That's amazing. And I think there's some tie-in with the Ewan McGregor show in Toronto like this month. I don't know if they shot something here, but
oh, is that right?
There's an event that's happening. I just got an email about it to have Russian tea in some room somewhere downtown.
Oh, so, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. I'll have to look that up.
Boy, everything is shot in Vancouver and Toronto these days.
A lot of stuff, yeah. I'll take a wild stab at this one. Have you seen Frosted, Jerry Seinfeld's movie?
Oh, I haven't, no.
Okay. Uh-huh. Well,
that's on the list, though. So.
It will help inform maybe the Barney Fife side of Hickman. You know, I think it's pretty, okay, it's pretty right. Slapstick. It's pretty funny.
Okay, great.
What, Ben, and when you were growing up in Minnesota, Minneapolis, what were you watching as a youngster? Was there a show that you just could, you raced home from school to see or just really loved way back?
Oh, yeah. That was The Simpsons for sure.
Ah, great. Wow.
Yeah. The Simpsons was the one that was like, I got to be sitting in front of the TV at 5 o'clock every day to make sure I catch the new episode. But then, you know, I do have very fond memories of watching Cheers with my mom. It was always like around bedtime, Cheers would come on, watch that, get sleepy, go off to bed. So that was kind of the family watching one. But yeah, for me, it was The Simpsons, absolutely.
Wow, two classics. And you and The Simpsons are like the same age, pretty well. I mean, that's the amazing thing, right?
Yeah.
I just got an
incredible run.
I got the Fox just announced their new season for 2024-25, and The Simpsons is heading into its 36th season.
Incredible.
When my son Dan, who's 31 now, he was seven or eight, he's like, dad, there's a guy on TV who sounds just like Mayor Quimby. And it was John F. Kennedy.
Of course.
Yeah.
So of course.
All our lives have been seen through this filter of The Simpsons. Well, Ben, finally, one last question, since we're going down this memory lane with shows. Do you have an all-time favorite TV theme song?
Well, I'm gonna throw Cheers out there right away.
It's a great one, yeah.
Especially since we were just talking about it. But that's one. I feel like these days you can skip through the openings of so many shows, and there are just a handful of shows where I will choose not to skip past it because I just enjoy the theme song and it really gets me in there. And Cheers would be one of them. Yeah. Adventure Time. I don't know if you're familiar with that cartoon.
No,
it was on the Cartoon Network for a long time, and it's I think it's developed kind of a cult following. But Adventure Time has a great theme song.
Okay,
and then from back in the day, got to be the OC. That was one when I was in high school. That the theme song for the OC just felt like it transported you.
Absolutely, I understand that. Yeah, no kidding. Well, those are great choices, and. The Cheers song, you're right, is something melancholy about it. I love when shows that they throw a curve, like Hill Street Blues had a very melancholy piano-based opening, and it didn't sound like cop shows of the day, right? Mm. It threw a curve, and I think that's always effective. Well, Ben, lovely talking to you. Thank you so much.
You as well.
Yeah, it was great.
Thank you for having me.
Well, my pleasure. Best of luck. Congratulations. I know you probably won't get back to work on When Calls the Heart for a while. Do you know when you're next due to step on set?
You know, we typically get started in the kind of the beginning summer months. So I would expect to be back up there July, I would guess.
Wow. Coming up then. Well, listen, have fun. And
thank you so much. We always do.
Yeah, I bet you do. It would be a cool show to work on. So congratulations on the renewal.
Thank you very much.
Everything that you've done so far. Really appreciate it. And now I'm very excited because thousands of Hardys will be listening to this podcast. So thank you for boosting my ratings.
Well, hello, Hardys, and hello, Hickies. I don't know where that came from.
Let's go with Hickies.
That one is a... Yeah, it came out of nowhere, but Hickey's is just taking the world by storm.
Well, Hickey's, Benny's, we're going to open it up. So anyway, best to you, Ben. Take care.
Thank you very much. All right. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Bye-bye. Thanks as always to Brio TV, the podcast Jack of All Trades, producer Phil Hong. I'm grateful as always to BJ Del Conte, Paul Boudre, and all the Crispy Critters, as well as piano man Stephen Dudley, who many years ago recorded the music you hear on this podcast. Finally, thanks to you, listener. If you enjoyed this conversation, well, let us know with a like or a comment. And, you know, if you're a hearty, tell everybody, tell all your friends, okay? I'm Bill Brio. Thanks for listening.